tuned to AJ Radio.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the program. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks. Our phone number, 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. How's everyone doing?
Doing well.
Doing good.
Lisa, let's do our disclaimer.
Okay, we want to remind everyone that we are not attorneys and that a Just Cause Coast to Coast does not provide legal advice. You want to contact your personal legal advisor for your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of a Just Cause or a Just Cause Coast to Coast. And as always, we want to thank you for tuning in and choosing to spend a little time with us this evening.
So, you know, on Tuesday evening, we talked about the IRP Solutions case, the IRP 6. And we also talked about more specifically how during the course of that case and during the course of the investigation surrounding that case, the federal government targeted the church that the gentleman attended and violated, you know, the religious rights of that church, violated several privacy actions and rights with regard to going into people's banking records without any subpoenas, went into the church's banking records, the banking records of the pastor of the church, Pastor Rose Banks, and then several other members. And then there were several other actions that were taken that had taken place during the course of that investigation. Well, we talked about that on Tuesday evening. This evening we're going to dedicate time to a part two of that, and joining us again will be Pastor Banks, along with several folks who were targeted as far as, and I'll say Lamont targeted for the sake of harassment.
Yes.
They were harassed by the FBI. They were harassed by IRS agents. And so we're going to give our listeners a firsthand account of some of those things. So you don't want to miss that. You want to stick around for that. But before we go there, we're going to spend just a few minutes talking about a couple of things that are in the news. And if you'd like to prepare for that discussion, please go out to freetheirp6.org. Again, freetheirp6.org. Out there you'll find a lot of information about the IRP 6 case. So anyway, going to the news. Lamont, we see today that this week, rather, George Zimmerman is in the news again. And this man, he had the audacity to blame President Obama for the racial tensions in the nation, and more specifically racial tensions against him. He's saying that, you know, some of the things that the way the president addressed that situation, that it has caused him undue attention.
Well,
I don't think anyone has to do anything to draw attention to George Zimmerman.
Well, I can tell you this, that, you know, if somebody's coming out talking about, this, consider the source of this information: Obama is to blame for racial tension against me. That is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. You are in a situation, Mr. Zimmerman, because you murdered a 17-year-old teen in cold blood, and it was worldwide news.
And unarmed.
Unarmed. So racial tension, you shot a 17-year-old black teenager with absolutely no cause whatsoever. But you want to point the finger at President Obama that he is the responsible for racial tension? Let me put it to you this way. It's not only the African American community that is outraged with George Zimmerman. It's people as a whole of every race that's outraged by what he did. So the racial tension against him is because he made a decision, he made a conscious choice to kill somebody. And that somebody was a black, unarmed, 17-year-old kid. That's just the bottom line. And to give that type of, you know, passing the buck, so to speak, and not take responsibility. And it's amazing to me that everybody, when it comes to race tensions, want to point to the president because he's African-American. The president has nothing to do with that.
And now, Lamont, he says Zimmerman says that, let's see, he said when President Obama spoke and said that if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon. Zimmerman says that to him, that was clearly a dereliction of duty, pitting Americans against each other solely based on race. He was stating a fact.
Yeah.
That he was just stating a true fact. How is that pitting Americans against each other based on race? That well, just because you were had the gall to just to kill an innocent young man, you th- now all of a sudden you want to say that he put that he pitted everyone he pitted Americans against each other. No, he did not.
Well, and you know, Lisa, it's come out even since that time, and with the turmoil in the country, that there are thousands upon thousands of African-American fathers all over this nation who have echoed the fact that they've schooled their sons on how to react if pulled over by a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's and you know, and that's not to say that every police officer is gonna do something corrupt or crooked. It's just the mindset of the African-American community, and those are the kind of things that, you know, people were trying to change that kind of mindset, but it still exists. And President Obama talked about it. Attorney General Eric Holder talked about it. I heard another gentleman on a program. He was talking about it, and it was clearly, you know, if you want to be sure that nothing happens to you, then you comply, and then, you know, if the system works the way it's designed to work, then there won't be any problems. But you know, Zimmerman just took it to a whole nother level. And like I said, you know, no one has to target George Zimmerman, and he doesn't have to. I mean, he put out an 8-minute video talking about this kind of stuff. But if you go back and look over Mr. Zimmerman's history, and this one of the news services put out a month by month almost account of Mr. Zimmerman's activities. And so in July of 2013, police in Texas pulled him over. They pulled over the former neighborhood watch captain for speeding. The police report says that Zimmerman informed the officer during the stop that he had a gun in the glove compartment. Zimmerman was let off with a verbal warning. So here's a man that has already murdered someone. He's carrying a weapon. And he gets pulled over. In August of 2013, Zimmerman stirs up more controversy by visiting a Florida gun manufacturer. And the company makes the gun that Zimmerman used to shoot Martin. So, you know, that made the news. Wow. So, you know, here you are visiting a manufacturer of the weapon that you use, your weapon of choice. In August again of 2013, the police pull over Zimmerman and warn him that the window tint on his car was too dark. So, you know, what's that all about? I mean, he would say that he was being targeted. But he was doing things, and, you know, we all know that when it comes to window tint and that type of thing, that, you know, they're going to pull you over if your windows are too dark. Another case, I think didn't he get arrested for assault or something
Felony assault. No, that was in November of 2013. He was charged with felony assault for allegedly pointing a gun at his girlfriend.
Yeah.
So he did do that. He was charged with that. And I guess he was released on $9,000 bond on that issue.
And then in September of that same year, he was put into custody for a domestic dispute. So, mm-hmm. and, you yeah. know, during that whole course of time, he was showing a pattern, if you will, of violence, yet this man was still carrying a weapon. So,
yeah.
you know, I think, you know, he has a lot of gall to try and point the finger at President Obama and say, you know, you are the problem for all of the racial tension that I'm facing and that type of thing. And
I'm pretty sure nobody's taking him seriously at all to even go out there. Said in one point of the information that he was ready to step into the boxing ring and take on challengers. Well, you can sign your death warrant if you'd like. I guess rapper DMX was going to actually get in the ring with him, and they called it off. And DMX has had some issues, but he's not the man you probably want to step in the ring with after killing a black guy. a black kid in Florida. So this is just really majorly insane.
Well, you know, and here's one that just really got to me, Lamont. In March of 2014, Zimmerman was at a gun show, another gun show, in Orlando, Florida. He appeared as a, quote, special guest and was signing autographs.
Wow. Are you serious?
Signing autographs.
And what idiot is getting a signed autograph from him?
And what exactly is he autographing? A picture of a dead kid?
Hey, wow. I'm not going to go there. That's unbelievable right there.
I mean, that you know, he's talking about the president, blaming the president for the racial tension against him. I would say something is wrong with anyone that wants to get an autograph from this guy.
Well, exactly. I mean, who's number one? Something is mentally wrong there. You're not a celebrity. You know what I mean? You know, celebrities, you know, they may make a new movie. They're at the premiere of their show. They've won an Oscar, an award. Let's get some autographs. How in the world do you even pick up a pen and even begin to write an autograph? You are well known around the world as a murderer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a killer.
And I wonder how much money he got paid to attend that gun show as a, quote, special guest.
You know,
that kind of stuff is just sickening. It really makes you sick.
It's
so
disgusting.
Mr. Zimmerman, if you want to point the finger at somebody else as far as creating problems, as far as tension toward you, I guess that's what we're doing.
And if you disagree, you're welcome to call in and have a chat with us about it. What's our number again there, Sam?
Our number, 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. For our listeners, we know that you're going to want to join in on our next conversation. We're going to shift gears and talk about the IRP 6 case and talk about how the church that they attended was targeted during their investigation. Now, the church is the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, and the pastor is Pastor Rose Banks. We had Pastor Banks on the air on our last program on Tuesday evening, and we were talking about, you know, how the church, the pastor was talking about, how the church was unjustly targeted during the situation. Now, the IRP 6 are David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Gary Walker. Now, just to give our listeners a little background again, for those who are not familiar with the case, the IRP 6 ran a company called IRP Solutions. They developed software. The software was called Case Investigative Lifecycle Software, and they developed the software for law enforcement. Now, this software was designed to allow law enforcement to collaborate and share information. And it is in direct response to some of the problems that were highlighted that contributed to the tragedies of 9/11. Now, you know, the 9/11 Commission report specifically stated that was a major issue, that different law enforcement agencies had information regarding some of the terrorists who were involved in the attack, but they were not sharing that information. Well, this software that was developed by IRP Solutions would answer that. IRP Solutions had gone on several trips to Washington, D.C. to do demos and so forth. And bottom line, the IRP 6 case, the IRP Solutions case, is a debt collection case. Everyone that has looked at it has validated that this is a debt collection case. Even the federal government's financial forensics analyst did a follow the money type thing and confirmed that the money did not go to the executives of IRP Solutions. The executives of IRP Solutions had contracts with staffing companies. The staffing companies paid their employees, the employees of the staffing companies. Now, in 2005, IRP Solutions was raided on bogus information that they were involved in some wrongdoing. And we've talked several times about all of the abnormalities that took place in this case. We had two grand juries. We're going to talk about grand jury stuff tonight because of the fact that even during the grand jury, members of the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church were called in to testify as to their knowledge about IRP Solutions, as well as the church. Even during the trial, now we talk about the IRP 6 a lot. another trial existed during this case as well, and that was the trial in the case of LaWanna Clark. And LaWanna Clark, they wrongly convicted her for six months in federal prison, saying that she committed perjury. Well, during her trial, they called members of the church. And now this was supposed to be a trial about IRP Solutions. And Lisa, you and I were just reviewing some transcripts, like, you know, within the last hour.
Yes.
And how many times did we see the name Colorado Springs Fellowship Church or church or members of the church? The whole line of questioning during that trial had everything to do with the church, nothing to do with IRP Solutions.
Just specific questions just about the church, not about IRP, just the church itself.
And those are the kind of things that we point to when we say that this church, the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, was wrongfully targeted by the federal government, the assistant U.S. attorney, Matthew Kirsch, and then the investigator, FBI agents, special agent, John Smith. And then you had IRS agent Sanchez, and then you had another IRS agent, Eichelberger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, folks ask, well, why is the church targeted in this? And that's the same question we want to know. We want to know, why is the church targeted in this? And you know, what was the purpose? And so, you know, Lamont, we talk about, you know, the IRS. They are supposed to, when they are investigating a church,
mm-hmm.
they're supposed to notify the church that they're auditing their books, that they're looking into them.
Well, the protection is there for a very distinct reason. And those rules and that protocol is to be followed very, very clearly as a result of Section 7611, which states that a church should have received and should receive written notification if there are concerns, if there are issues that they say that's red flagged, if you will, down to the simplest things, they have to notify the church in writing that we intend, we have some questions, there are some concerns. All of this is part of the protocol and actually is the law that the IRS is supposed to be bound to follow. And that's why you have Section 7611 that protects churches from this type of misconduct. And they, not one rule or protocol or procedure and consideration for Colorado Springs Fellowship Church or Pastor Rose Banks was even taken into consideration. The rules of the law were taken out of the equation when it came to Colorado Springs Fellowship, the IRP 6, as well as Pastor Rose Banks. That's not acceptable.
And, you know, for our listeners who again, may have missed the previous program, Pastor Rose Banks is the mother of one of the IRP 6. She's the mother of David Banks and the mother-in-law of Gary Walker. And the other gentleman also attended the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. Now, because you are the pastor of a church, and just because, you know, six gentlemen who are in business together attend the same church together, there's nothing illegal about that. However, right from the onset, you know, there are indications and court records to substantiate the fact that there were the motives did involve the church, like they trying to make some connection from a money laundering perspective that IRP was laundering money through the church. Now, that has been shot down, and I mean, holes just shot all in that theory because it makes no sense. However, I'm sorry, Lamont.
No, go ahead.
Now, but when you look at the trial of LaWanna Clark, and the grand jury foreperson was called as a witness, the grand jury foreperson was asked the question, who was the target of this investigation, the investigation for which the grand jury was hearing? Who was the target of this investigation? Do you know what the first name that came out of her mouth? Rose Banks.
Mm-hmm.
She said, Rose Banks, David Banks, and LaWanna Clark. Excuse me?
Yeah.
I thought this case was about IRP Solutions. And you're supposed to be trying to prove, which you couldn't prove, that IRP Solutions was involved in some elaborate scheme or some kind of elaborate scam.
Well, I can tell you this, that based upon the fact that it was stated by the U.S. Attorney's Office out of his own mouth that the church was not under investigation.
Yep.
If what is so amazing to me about this case, you couldn't have your foot inserted further down your mouth than what these people have done. But the fact that you make a statement and say the church is not under investigation, now you have to answer to the fact that records were seized then. If the church is not under investigation, you have solidified the point we are making. There is no subpoena because there's no investigation, which means you illegally went in and obtained records against the law, and you violated the religious rights of not only members of Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, the pastor, and the entity itself, which is against the law. And you will be held accountable for that.
And they should be. I mean, you know, this, and then to add to what you were saying, Lamont, 9,000 out of 18,000 pages of discovery.
Now,
were records pertaining to the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church.
The bizarre part about that, Sam, is this. If they were a part of the investigation, let's say we wanted to take a brief look to see. That's 50% of discovery.
Yeah.
That tells me, you know what? That raises high question and taints the entire due process of the IRP 6, because you know what it says? What were you looking for?
That's right.
Who were you really after? And if it's tainted, then the entire case, the conviction, all of it should be thrown out.
And I think the troubling thing, like I mentioned on Tuesday night, the troubling thing is that this is information that was brought before the judge. And what was the judge's response except we're not going to deal with that? Just basically in total agreement with the prosecutor that we're not going to bring the church issue into play. Why? Because it would destroy his case. How does the judge ensure that that does not come up so that the prosecutor can get the result that he's looking for?
But how do you allow? Discovery has to be allowed.
Right.
By the judge. How do you allow, if you don't want to, and then you want to reprimand the members for bringing up the church on the stand, but yeah, you let 50%, 9,000 pages of discovery for the prosecution of the federal government to come in. But then don't you dare talk about the church. Well, why did you allow the discovery in?
Well, hey, this one I know we're going to get into some deep conversations on. We got a lot of people waiting in the queue. Our phone number is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. Our special guest this evening will be Pastor Rose Banks. But then we also have some folks who are going to share firsthand accounts of how the FBI and the IRS went into their banking accounts supposedly related to the investigation of IRP. Again, no subpoenas. We're going to talk to people where the FBI and the IRS showed up at their homes. They went to their neighbors' houses and tried to smear their names and give them a bad rap in their community. We're going to talk to folks who were part of the grand jury. You don't want to miss this. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks. We'll be right back after this break.
Did you know that over 1.5 million children in America have parents that are incarcerated?
These children cope with the pain
through drugs, alcohol,
anger, and violence. It is so important.
It is so important for communities to provide preventative and intervention services.
Don't make them do it alone.
Become a part of the community.
The community.
Become a part of the community for hope.
Drugs in my pocket, hoping cops would catch me. no place to go. All I wanted to do was steal drugs, collect that money, and burn. I had no hope for nothing at all. Didn't care for anything or anyone. After doing some time, I was ordered to do probation.
Coast to Coast shares compelling stories about judicial injustice, but AJC doesn't leave it there. AJC Radio provides top guests from around the country who are advocates, activists, attorneys, and judges who provide insight into current events and the law. If you believe in what AJC is doing, we ask that you make a donation of any amount. Your kindness will be greatly appreciated. Go to www.a-justcause.com and click on the donate button. Again, www.a-justcause.com and click on the donate button.
Talk, news, politics, and inspiration.
The opinions and views expressed by guests and callers on A Just Cause Coast to Coast do not necessarily reflect those of A Just Cause or A Just Cause Coast to Coast.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks. Our phone number is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. This evening, we are presenting part two of a story, a portion of the story of the IRP 6 case involving the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. And on Tuesday evening, we talked about how the FBI and the IRS targeted the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church as part of their investigation of IRP Solutions. And I'll go to the extent of saying wrongfully targeted, illegally targeted, went into banking records without subpoenas, went into the pastor's banking records without subpoenas, banking records of church members, visited church members' jobs. It was just a all-out witch hunt. And yet, out of one side of their mouth, as Lamont stated before the break, the federal government was saying that, oh, no, the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church is not under investigation. Yet there is evidence in the testimonies, in the court transcripts, that show that Pastor Banks was targeted, the church was targeted. You don't ask a whole bunch of questions about a church if the church is not under investigation.
And you don't have half of your discovery as church banking records, if that is not what the focus of the investigation was. If that's not the focus of the investigation, why are half of your discovery documents pertaining to the church?
And, you know, Cliff, one thing, too, that we didn't mention on Tuesday evening, and that is even during the grand jury, during the court proceedings, all of the witnesses that they called that had anything to do with IRP Solutions or the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church or IRP Solutions, were members of the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church.
Yes.
There were more people who worked at IRP Solutions that had nothing to do with the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church that they never contacted.
That's right.
None you won't them, find them in the court transcripts
none
or anything.
None of them were brought before the grand jury. Just Colorado Springs Fellowship.
So what does that tell you?
You know, it must be that the church was not under was not the target or under investigation, as Mr. Dorschner said. Which is, I mean, it's
surely you jest.
It's comical. It's comical because when you lay the whole thing out, it's just like the federal government. You lay everything out that says this is what you're doing. You're being a crook. This is what you're going after. But then when you ask them point blank, are you being a crook? Are you going after this church? They're not under
Kendrick Barnes, one of the IRP6, presented a sworn affidavit saying that his attorney was even told by the prosecutor that, in so many words, he had to get off of the church thing, because if the church they're targeting the church got out, then he knew his case was over. Joining us this evening is Pastor Rose Banks of the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. And as I stated, Pastor Banks was on Tuesday evening sharing some heartfelt thoughts about this case in general. And so we appreciate Pastor Banks joining us again this evening. Pastor Banks, welcome to the program.
Yes, and thank you for having me back again tonight. I was thinking as you were talking a bit ago, I thought, how is it that you can do all of this abuse to a church? We're at a point in time in our country, and it's very sad to say, that our freedom is constantly being attacked or in some way shoved under the rug, that you're told you're freedom, that you have freedom to speak, you have freedom for this and freedom for that, but in actuality, our freedom is becoming less and less freedom. And when I think about all the things they did to the church and the things they said, and you got, you know what, it really gets to me when you can look in discovery and wonder what in the world is all of these things in discovery, banking records. It just blew our minds. It's like, what are you looking for? IRP 6 were members of our church, but IRP Solution was a company. They just happened to be members of the church. But I truly believe, as I said last night, they thought they were going to find something dirty on the church, that we had been doing something illegal, which was a total lie. And they thought that they were going to bring down the church, the pastor, and through that thing that they were expecting to find, you know what, you only look for stuff like that when you're a crook yourself. People tend to measure you by their own yardstick. And so if you're crooked in your church, perhaps you think we are, but we are not. And they looked and looked, and I'm not talking about for a short period of time. They did this for years. And what is so sad about it is that when you didn't find what you were looking for, then at that point in time, you set out to get the IRP6. The whole thing changed from the church to IRP6, everything. No longer talk about the church. The prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, in his own words, says, if the word gets out that we done the things we did to this church, we cannot win this case. How then is there a crime committed if you can't win the case? If IRP6 had committed a crime, why letting the church, let it be known that you were investigating the church when you lied and said you were not, then how is it that you wouldn't have a case? Well, the fact is you didn't have a case anyway. And that's why you were trying to use the church in which to blackball these men. And you really haven't succeeded, because we will never stop. We have been everywhere, and people are listening to what we're saying. And the ears are open, and people are looking into this case. We're never going to stop until justice is done. You know what? If the IRP6 had been men that were not men of integrity, and they were men that were doing undercover stuff and all of this, they would deserve to be in prison right now. But nothing is worse than putting people in prison when they didn't do nothing wrong, and then you try to use the church in which to indict them. When that didn't work, then you went the other way. You really wanted my head. I'm still trying to figure out why. Except I preached some gospel that you didn't like. But, I mean, for the most part, I think that's why my daughter went to prison. That they were trying to break the men down. They wanted them to do a plea deal. And the guy said, we're not going to do a plea deal. We're not going to do it. Because we didn't do anything wrong. And I agree with that 100%. If you did something wrong, you need to acknowledge what you did and pay the price for what you did. But if you didn't do anything, you're telling me to tell a lie? Now, you took my daughter and put her in prison and said that she perjured herself, which was a lie, and she lied about something in the grand jury, which was a lie. But then you turn around and say, you can't commit perjury. That's illegal. You've broken the law. But then they were telling the IRP, six, we need you to lie. And then they came back to IRP 6 and said, well, if you'll just say that you conspired together, we'll drop the rest of it. There was no conspiracy except with the government and Howling at Heart and all these different people and a crooked, cockeyed judge. That's where the conspiracy was. There was no conspiracy with the guys. The guys were working together doing something good for their country. And you're going to say that we want you to lie now. But what confidence can we have in our laws? If the law tells us you cannot lie, I'm so tired of this, you cannot lie to officials. Tell the officials to quit lying to us.
That's
and
right.
Quit lying about us.
And
it's okay for you to tell the law. The law don't apply. And then they said nobody is exempt from the law. That's not true. I mean,
right.
It's all over this country. People are lying, and they're getting away with it. It is amazing to me. And so if you didn't have a case, if the church information got out, you didn't have a case. And you've done everything in your power to be sure that we do it and the crooked judge or Goyle work right with you.
And
I truly believe in my heart that there are some good judges. There are some good people out there who really believe in the Constitution. Our forefathers did not put these laws in place for them to be used for people's own fulfillment or their own agenda, if you will. And so I look at that and I think to myself, every day I wake up and I think, I never dreamed in a million years that this was what was going on. They say you go to trial, you take your evidence, and when you do, if you're innocent, it will come out you're innocent. Everything that would have shown the jury that these guys never committed a crime, she wouldn't even allow it in. I'm not going to allow that. There should be a reason why you won't allow it. Why won't you allow it? If you say these people here are the one that's listening to my case and they're the ones who's going to make the decision, what if you got up and told a bunch of lies and marched in to the courtroom with at least 30 lying witnesses? But when it was our time to speak for ourselves, I'm not going to allow you to tell the jury that. When it was time for the guys to talk about their character and and how they worked hard for their families and what have you. No, you can't tell the jury that you're nice people. We want them to believe you're crooks. And you had absolutely no evidence. And you know why they never came to the church and told us that they were investigating and they needed to see our books? Our books was wide open. They could have came and saw them anytime they wanted to. They didn't do it because they'd already been sneaking around behind our back looking into it and couldn't find nothing. You know what it really boils down to? They were running with a dead ball and didn't even know it. Oh, we got to, oh, for sure there's some crooked. There's something dirty up under here. You know why? Because you're dirty. You people judge you by their own yardstick. And I'm a crook. I work underhanded. I'm greedy for money. All these things, that's who they are. But you're going to turn around now and do it to us and then just kind of tuck it up under the cover. Well, let me tell you, Colorado Springs and Just Cause is working fervently, and we will continue to show all the crooked things that you did to our families, to our church members, to our church as a whole, to our reputation. Even though you didn't hurt us one bit, our members are the same. Now I understand why people say, did any of your members leave? I said, well, why would they leave? Because that was their goal. We're going to put a black mark on this church and make it look bad and make it look like it's this or it's that, and then they'll lose all their members and that's it for that. No. No, it's not. In fact, we've done better. We haven't gotten worse. We've gotten better. So all the things that you planned against us is coming back to get you. And sooner than later, the whole country will know what you did to this church, to this pastor, to six men that were good men, working hard, doing what was right, and I can never understand how you reward people that is not breaking the law with a jail sentence. I'm never going to understand that. And so all that we went through, God is faithful. I am thankful for that. He has kept us strong. He has kept us. We never give up. You only give up when you're wrong. That's why they wouldn't do a plea deal. They had all the information, all the emails to confirm exactly what they did. Everything from the time they started up until the time they began to put their rotten nose into our business. But you know what? The worst thing you could have done was come against the church. Because there's churches all over this country, believe me. And I can tell you right now, you're not just going to, if you hit one church, you're going to hit a lot more of them. Because people are going to say, if they did it to that church, they'll do it to us. Well, they at first went into some other church in Colorado Springs. I'm not sure what it's called. It's Colorado Springs something. Ours is Colorado Springs Fellowship. I can't quite remember what this other one, this Colorado Springs something I can't think now. They thought that, huh?
I believe it was called the Fellowship Church.
The Colorado Springs Fellowship Church.
No, that one was called Fellowship Church. That they also went into their records.
They went into their banking records, thinking that it was ours.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you did this not only to us. You did it to another church in town who knew nothing about any of this stuff. You were in their books. You're so screwed up, you don't even know what church you're looking for. But you know what? One thing I know for sure, right is going to win out in this situation. If I've never been convinced of anything, I am convinced that right is going to win and is winning every day. We need not worry or be concerned about the crooked, underhanded, cruel, abusive behavior that took place with this prosecutor and this judge, Aguero. And so it's coming back to these people. You're going to answer for everything that has happened to us, all that you put us through, all because I truly believe there was a lot of backroom deals done. That's my opinion. To stop these men with this software, don't let them be the people who will have it. Because Homeland Security said to them, to some of the those multi-billionaire contractors for the government, said to them, you'll have to hook up with IRP solutions. They have the solution the governments have been waiting for. And what they did said, let's get rid of it. Let's get rid of them, put them in prison. We're not going to about to let a little African-American company beat us out. Nobody's going to beat anybody out. People were working hard. If you were too dumb to come up with a solution, that's your problem. If they were smart enough to come up with the solution and it works for the government, why didn't you come on and say, look, it's going to protect our country. We're all going to be better because of it. Why don't we unite? Oh, no way. You're black number one, and then on top of that, we're just not going to let you have that kind of money. And we didn't even care. All we wanted, those guys wanted, was to do what they could. Naturally, they were going to get paid for their labor, and everybody should. But it never would have stooped to such a level. I thought, what is this? In America, this is uncomprehendable. You can't even wrap your mind around it. So I'm just thankful that we've come this far, and God has helped us, and we are in a good place right now, because people are listening, and people who can make a difference, people who can change this situation, people who can say, what did you do to this church? You could never get away with it. But I appreciate you for having me back on tonight, but I know without a doubt we're winning every day. And because we win, help some other small African-American church, or maybe they're not even African-American, just a smaller church, because they seem to take advantage of the smaller people. Because if they go to the Catholic Church, they would boot them out all the way across the ocean.
Right.
They're not going to mess with them. They're too big. So they come after little people and try to make you feel like, okay, and then we put some of your family in jail to get back at you because we really couldn't find any dirt on you because, number one, there was none to be found. Thank you so much.
And Pastor Banks, I'll comment on that, and I'll ask you a question as we chime in. And Sam, you may want to come in here with me on this as well. I think what's ironic here is that you're dealing with a church, and I think the listeners need to know, Pastor Banks is a pastor that actually, and Pastor Banks, you can speak to this when we're done here, but she actually speaks to members in regards and teaches the philosophy of respecting government, respecting and paying your taxes and doing the things that, and abiding by the laws and all of these things that I think people need to be aware of. And I think the tragic part here is that Pastor Banks has been a pastor here for 34 years. And again, you know, they went looking for things that they did not find. They went looking, and I don't know if that's, Sam, I mean, maybe you can chime in on this, but maybe that's the stigma, because a lot of churches, and Pastor Banks, you may agree, over the years have been targets of the IRS, as you've seen in the national news with that they targeted churches and they were doing this and doing that. And now, seemingly to cross the line to a church, and like you said, they've done the snooping around and the sneaking around. Surely they knew, and I think that's what makes them culpable in this intent, in the crimes that they committed against this church and against the members of the church, is because they definitely did research and they could find nothing. And they would,
yeah.
And I believe, what are your thoughts basically that now, if churches and the life's work that you've given your life to, to teach people the right way and to teach them that, that God expects them to respect government and to do the things that are right. What are your thoughts on the fact that the government, even at this point, targets churches now that are not even questionable in actions or behavior but are above reproach? Is that, does that give a signification of where we are as a country right now? When it, if
yeah,
really-
I think it does, and I think, and I want to also, while we're talking about this, that there are so many churches and especially mega churches and what have you, that there's so much millions and millions of dollars transitioning in these churches, and they're doing a lot of things under the name of church or non-profit organization, and they're doing things that are crooked and wrong. And I am not for that at all. And, but you know what, I think they automatically take the baby and throw it out with the bathwater and say, well, all these preachers are the same, and they're taking this money, and they're living large. And like Creflo Dollar, he was on there and asking for $65 million. They start kind of thinking all preachers function and think the same, and it's not true.
Sure.
And so that's why I think they originally attacked the churches, is because there was so much going on that really wasn't nonprofit. They were profiting from this stuff. And
yeah.
So all of a sudden, they felt like they had a good reason now that we can go after churches. Anytime you do something wrong, it affects somebody else's life. So we are our brother's keeper. And so what they did, they said, well, you know, all of them got to have some skeletons in their closet. You just got to look and dig hard enough. Well, God got some real people out here who don't have any skeletons in their closet. They work hard to do it right. They take the ministry serious. And they love people, and Colorado Springs Fellowship Church has shown that. I mean,
right.
The things that we do in the community and the outreach is phenomenal. But you know what? But if you're going to think that we're all the same, and that's why people need to pull it in, these mega church preachers and what have you, who are literally bringing in multi millions of dollars. And they got different names they put it under to try to cover themselves. We've never done that, ever. And we surely don't have millions of dollars. We surely don't. But I think that's another reason that they're doing it, is the fact that they got to have something somewhere. They're no different from nobody else. Yes, we are.
Yeah, and I think that is definitely goes to the point that the judicial system, as we bring in both of these worlds, because that's what it is, that now we talk about racial profiling in the country with African Americans. Now we are going to racially profile churches and put them all in the same boat, as you alluded to. It again speaks to the tone of this country right now, that now everybody was outraged and people are outraged about the judicial. We need judicial reform. Well, now it steps into, and I think we said this on Tuesday night, it steps now into the churches now. Now, what's the next step? Do we go into daycare centers and we start harassing kids? I mean, there's no ending to what the government is doing. And again, I think the just cause and the purpose of that is to continue to go out and to speak up against these things and to defend, be defenders of right, of the right thing, and definitely expose the wrong. And this is one of those things that I think what you speak to is very, very important. Sam?
And, you know, also back in, I think, 2013, Fox News reported that the IRS was targeting the Tea Party and Patriot groups. But then they found that the targeting actually, as you said, Lamont, spread to churches. But it didn't just start in 2013. Obviously, even with the situation that we have here with the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, but it was done in such a manner to try and keep it under wraps and try and you know keep it undercover. But Michigan Representative Mike Rogers, he was interviewed back at that time, and he said, you know, that they had come to the conclusion that IRS and their agents were engaged in intimidation of political groups. And he says, you know, you don't care if you're conservative, liberal, Democrat, or Republican, this should send chills up your spine. And I agree with you, Pastor Banks, in the sense that when you say that our freedoms are being whittled away, where you used to be able to just walk down the street. Well, let's use the airport for an example. And I know this is for our own safety, but you used to be able to go to the airport. Your whole family went to the gate with you. Everybody sat there and waved as the plane pulled away. Now you got to take your shoes off to even get to, you know, to get to your gate.
Right.
So, you know, but as far as the church is concerned, though, when the IRS does this kind of thing, and there should be, or as far as the Constitution is concerned, we're protected. Churches are protected from this type of intimidation, this type of just authoritarian type government approach. And that's not supposed to be what's going on. I mean, in this situation, as we talked about before, where they clearly violated rules of notifying the church that you are under investigation. But if you say on the one hand you're not under investigation, but then you're doing the sinister undercover act secretly investigating you, you know, where do you draw the line? So, Pastor Banks, I ask you, you know, as far as the church being notified, I think we've talked about it. And how did the church find out? I know we talked about discovery documents, but when representatives of the church went to the banks where the church did their business, what did the banks have to say?
There was no subpoena ever given to them in reference to our church ever. There was no subpoena. So how did you go in for years into the bank and pull our records? We're not under investigation. You don't have anything from the courts. You don't have a subpoena that says that you suspect us of doing any wrong things. How did you end up in our bank account? And also, how did you end up at the UPS, mailboxes that we had there? You go in there, and the man told my daughter, who ran it at the time, he said, I'm so sorry, Yolanda, they came in and went through all, everybody's who had a mailbox there. And he said they brought in a postmaster. I didn't have any choice but to let him in. No, even with the postmaster, you should have had a subpoena.
Yep,
absolutely.
Because it doesn't make him God. But you know what? I question that.
Yeah,
you don't know who came in there, if there was a postmaster came in there, or the poor guy was so threatened and so afraid until he just said that. You just don't know, because it's all about intimidation and fear. But what are you doing in my mailbox?
That's right.
And everybody else's mailbox, and they found nothing again.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. They were looking for anything they could find. And those IRS agents, they followed us around during this entire trial like vultures waiting for a chance to finally get their prey.
Wow.
I mean, continuously they followed around. And I'm thinking, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And that's, I mean,
it's
that's
all about intimidating you, because there was nothing for the IRS agent to be involved in this case.
Absolutely. And yet,
you didn't follow one rule that said that you had a right to follow this case. Not one rule that, and they're your rules.
That's
not
right.
One. And so, I mean, they stayed in the picture the entire time, like we hope we can find a penny somewhere. But you know what? God is so good, and when you do it right, you don't have to worry about it. And it didn't work anyway. It didn't work.
And Pastor Banks, I have one more question for you. You know, we talk about all of this injustice. I mean, you know, we sit here week after week, and I can tell you our emotions get really reared up at times as we see the constant injustice, as people dying every day, and the government, and all the frustrations, and your rights feeling like they've been taken. As a pastor, what steps do you take to keep the faith of your parishioners to the point to continue to believe that something good will happen, that good will come out of this some way. As a pastor, how do you keep the faith going there?
Only thing we can tell people is that your trust and your faith and confidence better be in God. Because when you see our government doing the things that they're doing, you can't stand up in church and tell a lie and tell people, oh, you know, what about that? You go to trial, you'll get a fair trial, and you'll be able to bring your evidence, and you'll be heard, and you'll be given a chance to prove your innocence. And you can't tell that lie. That's a lie.
Right.
The bottom line is your trust and your confidence better be in God. Because he's the one that's going to bring you through. We're nothing up against a government of this size that's doing corrupt things. But we got a God that's way bigger than this government. And you better have him on your side, and you better be on his side, because that's the one who's going to get you through it. So I don't tell people that you can trust. There's many things I used to think that, well, you can get a fair trial, and it's such a good thing. You can get an attorney if you don't have one, and the government will pay for it. No, you can get a vulture.
Right, right.
Who's waiting to take your head off with the prosecutor to put you in a position where you don't even have an appeal when they put you in prison. You don't have no attorney. The people are going to follow. The government gives them their checks, and they're going to do what the government says.
And that's the
bottom line.
And I just
tell people, put your trust in God, do the right thing, and he'll bring you out. Because there's so much corruption going on here until, my God, I never dreamed it happened here. But I've seen so much stuff until I shall never forget it. And people better know God is your only hope. He's your only help. If you don't have him, you have nothing. Because you can't even trust and don't dare believe it. There may be some good attorneys out there and public defenders. I'm not saying it's not, because we've had some good stories on this show showing just the opposite. But for the most part, whoever pays your check, that's what you're going to do.
Sure. Thank
you so much.
No, you're very welcome. Sam, I think that, we talk at times about an eroding effect, something that has become eroded, has become decayed, if you will. As I listen to Pastor Banks and this story, as we dig deeper and deeper, what we find, what is so sad, is that the erosion of this country, there was a time in this country where churches could tell their members about justice. They could tell their members that America was a good place. This was many, I don't know how far back, whether I probably wasn't alive at that time, but the foundations and the core of this country, I don't think they understand when things happen like this to churches and they begin to suffer the egregious injustices that we see here. I think what we find more and above anything else is that now you have the churches who used to be a pillar to speak for government or morality. Every core of that is now being taken away. So as we attack churches, now you have another disconnect now from the American people and the government even further now. Because like Pastor Banks said, she's not going to go up there and tell the people, hey, it works. The system doesn't work, apparently. And it works only as a result of us fighting and fighting for justice. I think that's critically important. The points are well taken that Pastor Banks made.
And, you know, we appreciate Pastor Banks sharing her thoughts on this as she did on Tuesday evening. You know, one of the we asked, we're going to be bringing on some folks who can give some firsthand accounts of some of the other things that occurred here. And I think Pastor Banks is going to stay in the queue with us if we need to bring her back on for additional comment. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask the pastor, too, was, and we could do it after the break, is, you know, we talk about this thing about blanket immunity and how prosecutors use that as a cloak to cover their crookedness. And in this case, when Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch was challenged on this matter of banking records being seized without subpoenas, and he makes the comment that, you know, he fought that by saying that it would put him on a slippery slope, and that IRP6 had no right, that their due process had nothing to do with him disclosing how those banking records were obtained. And I would say that their due process depended totally on him identifying how he got those banking records. So, you know, we're going to have a little bit more of Pastor Banks when we come back, and then we're also going to have some of the other folks who were involved and were targeted as part of the investigation of the IRP6. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks. Our phone number is 347-838-8976. Our special guest is Pastor Rose Banks, pastor of the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, as well as some of the other members of the church who were targeted during the investigation of the IRP6. If you like more information about the IRP6, go out to FreeTheIRP6. That's the number 6.org. FreeTheIRP6.org. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Every crime has a victim, and every victim needs help. Being violated by a crime can leave you feeling alone in the world. National Center for Victims of Crime can help. Let us be your resource, your support, your guide to rebuilding your life and restoring hope. Yes, you have the ability to recover. Take the first step. Call 1-800-FYI-CALL or visit us at www.ncvc.org.
These are the voices that prisoners in solitary confinement hear every day. Out of Arizona's total of 2,076 prisoners held in solitary, 30% are taking prescription medication to deal with mental illnesses, and 11% have diagnosed schizophrenia. Experts report that the extreme and prolonged isolation exacerbates pre-existing conditions and appears to even cause mental illness in prisoners who were not previously ill. While prisoners deserve punishment, Arizona can do better. We need to change the solitary confinement rules. Unlike any other states, Arizona prisoners are held in 8x10 cells for at least 23 hours a day, with no windows and virtually no human interaction. Perhaps the best way to fix solitary confinement so it strikes a balance between punishment and humanity is to decrease the size of solitary units. Colorado, Texas, Mississippi, and Illinois have decreased the size of their units, only admitting prisoners who need the rehabilitating experience, and have saved over $6 million without compromising prison safety. A study produced in Colorado reported that after decreasing the number of solitary units, prisoners experienced an improvement in overall mental health of the confined inmate population. How can we do this? We need to reach out to Director of Corrections Charles L. Ryan, asking him to decrease the number of solitary units. Solitary confinement needs to remain a place for punishment and behavior change, but it can also be a place of innovation and rebuilding.
You are listening to AJC Radio.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks this evening. We're talking about how the federal government investigation against the IRP Solutions Corporation and the IRP 6 targeted the church that they attended, the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, and its pastor. We have joining us as our special guest is Pastor Rose Banks, and then we also have some other people that are going to be chiming in on this conversation. Cliff, who do we have next?
We have Yolanda Walker is on the line. Are you with us, Yolanda?
Yes, I am.
Lady.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you taking a little time out of your evening to go over this matter again tonight.
So, Yolanda, I know that your husband, Gary Walker, is one of the IRP6. And we've talked about it before as to how the federal investigators, whether it was the FBI or IRS or what have you, actually went to people's jobs and got some folks fired, and that would be the case in the matter of Gary. Can you share some insight on that?
Yes, that was the case. There was a lot of activity there. Gary was a director at Kaiser Permanente up in Denver, and I remember him telling me that the FBI had came to his job, was asking questions, and then later on he got called into a meeting with two men. One was an attorney from Holland and Hart and an FBI agent. They had originally told him the meeting was about something job-related, but he didn't know till he went in there that these two people were there. And they began to ask him a lot of questions. They kept him in there for like 2 or 3 hours. They were asking questions about the software, the church, and my sister LaWanna's court case. And he was trying to figure out and asking them why they were asking all these questions when he was only supposed to be in there for some kind of job review. And so after that time, when they had been talking to him for that time, he got a call from his job that they were putting him on administrative leave until they could find out what was going on with this situation. And so during that time, I decided to go to Kaiser to talk to his boss, to let her know what the truth was about the situation. But when I got there, she wouldn't come down to see me. They sent a person from HR, came to see me, and I told him the story about the software and how the government was trying to screw them over, in so many words, and steal the software and that sort of thing. And he was in shock, and he said he would take this information back and they would discuss it. But after they did that, they had Gary on administrative leave for maybe 2 to 3 weeks, and then they had called him back in, and then when he came in, they terminated him.
And, you know, this points right to one of the things that we talk about, that during this time frame, the gentleman had not had their day in court. They had not been convicted of anything. If anything, the federal government, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, had started the blackballing of the gentleman, and it even goes back before then. So, you know, some of the listeners may say, well, why was Mr. Walker working at another company if he had IRP Solutions? Well, when you have the federal government going around to all of your prospective, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mrs. Walker, but the federal government going to prospective clients and customers of IRP Solutions and telling them not to do business with them. So Mr. Walker and the rest of the IRP 6, they went back to what they did very well, and that was being consultants in the open market, because they still needed to make a living. But still, you know, there was this effort to blackball them, blackball IRP Solutions, first of all, to try and shut it down. You accuse IRP Solutions of running a scam, but then you close all the doors so they can't make any money, yet there were opportunities there to make money. And if they were able to close some of those deals, they would have been able to settle their debt, because we all know that this is about debt. Is that not true?
Yes, that's correct. And all that, I mean, they were pushing hard to get business closed so they could pay their bills. And everywhere they went, everywhere they did try to get business to sell the software, we found out later that the government had been there tearing everything down that they had built up. And I remember my husband also, he even had written a letter to the CEO of Kaiser Corporate Office explaining the situation and what had happened. They did nothing about it. They referred the letter back down here to the local office where he worked, and Holland and Hart somehow was their attorney at that time too. So it's just been a big web of deception all the way around.
So, Mrs. Walker, when you first heard that the investigation began to target the church where your mother is a pastor, what was your feeling about that?
I was very angry and also trying to figure out why. I didn't have a clue why it was happening. I was just very angry about it because it was just snowballing to more and more stuff that there was no explanation for it.
So now, Mr. Walker, is as well as the rest of the IRP6, have been wrongfully convicted, wrongfully incarcerated for now going on 3 years. And when you look at the manner in which all this took place, what does it make you feel about the judicial system in the United States?
I don't believe in it. Judicial system means nothing to me. Unless it gets reformed, I mean really reformed, where some changes are made, I will never believe in it again. They put my sister in prison. They put my brother, my husband, my friends. These are all innocent people. And no matter what you said, what evidence you had, it doesn't matter. That judge got away with doing whatever she wanted to. She broke the law. Nobody does nothing about it. Same way with Matthew Kirsch, the assistant U.S. attorney, his assistant, Anita Hazra, his boss, Walsh. Nobody does anything about these people breaking the law. And so I don't have any confidence in it, period. I don't think I ever will again unless I see some serious change.
Thank you, Ms. Walker, for sharing your thoughts and sharing some insight on that situation. You guys got any questions for Ms. Walker?
Well, and I'm going to have a comment on what Ms. Walker said. I think, you know, when you hear somebody say, Sam Cliff, you know, and you can hear the disappointment in a system. I mean, you're talking about people's lives that, and I'm going to just do the analogy that a tsunami hit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I hear Ms. Walker talk and Pastor Banks, this is why people become completely delusioned as a result of this system. This is what I consider the collateral damage. And Ms. Walker is one person. She has a son who is affected by this. The IRP6 look at the lives. And to say, you know what, I don't believe in this system anymore. You know what? That ceases to be America that we once believed. How much of an impact and how saddening that is to me that we live in a time where when you say, I don't even believe in it no more.
Yeah, and I think that the mass majority of the public still believes in the system. And you don't really understand how corrupt it is, how bad it is, how broken it is, until you really fall in
prey
its
to
grasp.
It.
When you fall prey to the American justice system, it consumes your life. I mean, they have the same that, you know, it takes one person to put you in prison, a judge, and it takes an army to get you out.
Yeah.
Whether you're, you know, especially when you're wrongfully convicted. And you look at what Ms. Walker is saying, what Pastor Banks is saying, that not only themselves, but like you said, Ms. Walker has a son. Pastor Banks has to encourage an entire congregation, a church, to say, I mean, how do you go in front of a church and say, you know what, you better not believe what the system says, when, as she talked Tuesday night, her husband spent over 20 years in the military fighting for this country,
Sure. Fighting
for the justice and the different freedoms for the citizens of this country. And for her to have to stand up and make that statement in front of the congregation that, hey, it sounds good, but when it boils down to it, you cannot trust this system, the American justice system. And that is a tragedy. And day after day after day, we see all these things that happen that they say, hey, this prosecutor did this, this judge did this. When are we going to change the system so that the attack that it is having on its citizens, When do we make it stop? When do we force that to stop so that people like Ms. Walker and Pastor Banks can tell the people that that they speak to, that they encourage, that, you know, Ms. Walker is raising a son. How do you tell your son, okay, the America is your country, you should love it, but don't trust anything about it? That is a difficult task.
Yeah, and I think Pastor Banks alluded to the fact she raised all of her children to believe in something.
Right.
And so what you create ultimately, I think why it's such an impact. You believe this.
Yeah.
A man's belief is what he has. And if I believe a system works, and I'm teaching my children that, and they come and I find out that it's a lie, this is a tragedy. I mean, it's nothing short of a tragedy.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Ms. Walker, for joining us this evening and sharing your thoughts on this situation. Can we bring Pastor Banks back on just for a second? I wanted to ask that question that we mentioned just before the break, and that is due process and the blanket immunity issue, where in this case it's on the court records where Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch made the comment that if it got out as to how they obtained banking records, then it would put them on a slippery slope. And he did not want to disclose that, which that is not allowing for due process in this situation.
Yeah.
And so, Pastor Banks, when you think about that occurring in this courtroom and how a jury did not get an opportunity to hear this undercover operation, yet it was obviously illegal. What do you think about that kind of thing?
I think it's really sad when you've got all type of wrongdoings and you're working under the cover and you're trying to keep everything covered up that you've done wrong so the jury never finds out about it, and then when you want to bring it in or try to talk about it or bring it before the jury, no, the jury can't hear that. Why can't they hear that the prosecutor is lying? What is the problem? Who's telling the truth is what you want to know. And so who's lying? Is the prosecutor lying, or are we telling a lie? It's really incomprehensible, and it bothers me so much for the secrecy. Everything they do wrong is kept a secret. Either stick a rag or gag on in your mouth and choke you to death and say, don't talk about it. And if you do, you're going to jail. What kind of stuff is this? So you can't say anything about what I say. I said to the, and you don't know what's being said to the judge in the judge's quarters. You have no idea what's going on back there.
That's right.
Yeah. It is just, it's tragic. It really is. And it's so much covered up. And you know what? Our society as a whole, they don't even know the stuff that's under the cover. When the media tells a story, it tells part of it. But it always tells the story where it doesn't make the government look bad. So When a judge or grower said to my daughter, well, I can't, even regardless to what you give, I have to rule in the favor that's better for the government side. How is that? If the government is wrong and I have proof that I'm right, you have to steal room for the government?
Yeah.
That is the most unjust stuff I've ever heard. And I am just alarmed in the light that's most favorable to the government. Even
yeah.
though you may be right. Even though you may have evidence to support it. But when I make a ruling, I'm going to have to rule toward the government. I'm going to have to give this case to them regardless. That's not justice. I wish y'all would let somebody on the show find that oath that the judge takes. It is incomprehensible. You got the rule in the light that's most favorable to them, regardless of what you bring in the courtroom, regardless of what your evidence is, regardless of how much is on the table. I'm sorry. I got to stand with the government. That is not justice. Justice is, I'm going to listen to what you're saying, the government's saying, listen to what you're saying. Okay, if the government has proof to prove their case, by all means, give it to them. But if the defendants or the citizens of this country have solid evidence to support their innocence, it doesn't matter if you take it in. She's going to rule for the government. Those were her words to my daughter. You're going to prison because they want you in prison. I had the nerve to ask for 18 months. Do you know people don't even go to prison for perjury?
Yeah.
My daughter probably broke the record. It's incomprehensible. One lawyer told me, he said, everybody knows everybody lies in court. He said, everybody knows it. The judge knows. People come in lying. The prosecutor's lying. The judge is lying. Everybody's lying. Nobody goes to jail but LaWanna Clark. I just think it's insane.
And what that says, you know, that the judge has to rule in the light most favorable to the government. Basically, what that judge is saying is, it really doesn't matter what evidence that you bring in here. I'm going to ignore it because I have to make sure that the government wins their case. And that is sick. Because
that's it.
How then are you putting on a defense? How is there a trial? You might as well go in and say, the judge might as well come in and say, look, you're going to do some time. The prosecutor is going to win. So let me go ahead and give you your sentence. Now, that is not a trial. That is not fair justice. That is the judge not playing referee, ensuring that the prosecutor gets a conviction. And that's why the conviction rate is at almost 99%, because the judges play a role in what happens in the courtroom instead of sitting back and playing referee.
Yeah, and I think to Pastor Banks's point in regards to the LaWanna Clark serving 6 months for a perjury charge is absolutely unheard of. That this is a young woman, and this is why, you know, it is tainted, and the motives and the intentions of the government is exactly what it sounds to be, a corrupt modern day lynching, of attempted lynching, if you will, of Colorado Springs Fellowship, Pastor Banks, its members, as well as the IRP6. There are people with records that have been in trouble with the law who are given a perjury conviction that do no time. That is uncomprehendable. But again, it the plot thickens with this type of actions, and it is like Pastor Banks said, it's uncomprehendable. You really cannot wrap your hands around that. No matter what you do, you can read this every day, dig into it every day, and you still cannot come up. And the people that we have talked to, they're scratching their heads. These are people who've been in law for 30, 40 years. In high level positions of the law, and in Washington D.C., that says we are confused.
Yeah,
and Lamont, what about the congressmen? And I will not call their names. Who said, I have never seen corruption at this level in a white collar crime in my life.
Absolutely. I mean,
I've never seen anything like it. Others on the Hill said, where is the crime?
When we had a member of Congress, when we told them this story, said, I've never seen such prosecutorial misconduct.
Absolutely.
Now, when you have a member of Congress, most people in Congress, and this member as well, has a law background.
That's right.
Is a lawyer, practiced law, and has been in Congress dealing with laws, creating laws, understands how laws are made, carried out, and should be abided by. And for a member of Congress to say, I've never seen such prosecutorial misconduct, that shows the level of what happened in this case, all the way from the investigations of the FBI agent, and we're going to bring on a member of Colorado Springs Fellowship, where the FBI went to his house, then went to his neighbor's house, telling lies about him during their so-called investigation. But you see, all the way, you know, they have a term called from the cradle to the grave, meaning from the beginning to the end of a process. All the way from the cradle to the grave of this case, there was misconduct by everybody, from the FBI agent John Smith, who even got the the search warrant. I mean, that is where it started. Then to impanel two grand juries to get an indictment off of lies of one FBI agent being a witness in the second grand jury. You don't present any evidence or any witnesses for the defense, and then you get an indictment. No wonder they can get an indictment on a ham sandwich.
Well, the statement was made very clear that the people who had looked over this case that we have talked to, they have said to us, they passed it on to very senior attorneys, people who are well. We're not talking about people that's in the working in the basement out of their house,
right?
But these are people who are seasoned years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not a coincidence, and it's not just one congressman. We're talking several members on the Hill are saying something has to be done here. They're scratching their head. When you have scholars of the law, scratching their head saying this doesn't make any sense. One of the scholars made the statement to us. We can't find a crime.
Exactly.
Here.
I mean, and that individual was not even a defense attorney. We're talking about a former federal prosecutor, a person who was an assistant U.S. attorney previously, said, I've gone through the entire transcript. There is no crime. How did this make it to federal court, and how did the judge not throw this out? There is no crime laid out in the indictment or going through the entire transcript.
And you do understand, not only was that statement made by that individual, there was a meeting called with the high-ranking officials of this firm.
Yes.
That reviewed it.
And said, there is no crime
here. We can't find it.
We can't find the crime.
And to use a phrase that we've heard many times that folks have said, It doesn't pass the smell test.
Yes, it does not pass.
In other words, something stinks.
Something stinks.
Sure.
It's rotten. We are going to bring on Willie P. Willie P. is a member of Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, and during the investigation of the supposed to be the investigation of IRP Solutions, the FBI agents went to Mr. P's house. And he's going to tell you the atrocious story about what happened there. Willie, you are live. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
All right, we got you. We appreciate you coming on the show to give us, you know, what happened to you. Go ahead and give a little background and what happened in your situation.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on your show. And I've been listening in, and you know, this FBI agent, John Smith, pretty much was just out on a witch hunt. You know, I had nothing to do with the IRP Solutions. I do attend the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. And this gentleman, this FBI agent, harassed my family, went to my neighbor, degrading my name, you know, trying to defame my character. Because, you know, I go out and I talk to people about, you know, attending the church and this and that and the other, and even went to the extent of having a pizza man who delivering pizza to knock on my door and hiding behind this gentleman to get into my house. For what reason? I have nothing to do with IRP Solutions. I have nothing to do with this case that you're trying to investigate me. All I can say that was going on in this situation was you were harassing the people of the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. And basically, I think the whole thing, as I'm listening to everything that's being said here, is that you were after the church. It had nothing to do with the High Priest Solution. You were after Pastor Rose Banks to try to defame the name of Colorado Springs Fellowship and to put a black mark on the church. And I am so appalled that you would even consider trying to do such a thing because, you know, whether you try to tear it down, the scripture says, no weapon formed against it shall prosper. No matter what you do in this situation against Colorado Springs Fellowship, it's going to take off anyway. It's going to do what God has intended for it to do. This agent, and another thing I want to add, this agent basically called my consulting firm, because I was working for an IT consulting firm, called my consulting firm and tried to, try to get information on where I worked or what have you. I'm so glad that these people that I worked with knew who I was. And they were saying, they asked him, say, hey, who are you, send me over your credentials, and basically we'll see what we can do. At that point, when they asked for the credentials, he hung up the phone. Let me know that he's crooked. There was no investigation. That was basically harassment that was going on there.
Absolutely. So they went to his house. Mm. They, like I said, harassed his family, and then went to his neighbor, a pizza man. You're going to put a pizza man up to, like, just get him to come to the door, and we'll take it from there. And then go to his job to try to – because they know that if an FBI agent shows up at your job asking for you
– it's your last day.
Yeah, you will be getting one box
and
two security guards to help you with your things to your car. It's over.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, gratefully he had his staffing agency, you know, knew what the law was. That, hey, if you want information about him, you're going to have to present a subpoena. You're going to have to give us credentials saying who you are and what you want concerning this man.
Well, it sounds like what they've done here, this is again uncomprehendable. These particular folks that are involved with this particular gentleman going to his house, his job, these are the same people on the IRP 6 case.
Yes.
So why don't they – how are they going to justify stuff being used in an investigation when this particular gentleman has absolutely no connection? So you've spent money and man hours coming to this man's house. You've defamed his character. And again, it goes to the point. The misconduct and the taint, the way this thing is tainted, there has to be action with that case, and the conviction with the IRP 6 has to absolutely be thrown out. I would think that would be the case. Sam?
Yeah, Mr. P, I just had a quick question. Now, were you called by the prosecution at all to testify?
No, I was not.
Wow. And so even there, it's like, why are you trying so hard to get at this man, and if you think that he has something to offer that's going to help you to illegally, you know, sacrifice the rest of the IRP guys, then why don't you put him on the witness stand?
Right, and then what is crazy now, you look at this and you say he has no connection to IRP Solutions. The only common denominator here is Colorado Springs Fellowship
Church. Absolutely.
That would be the only reason they were trying to get in touch with him. Dorshner, the spokesman, the PR rep for the U.S. Attorney's Office up in Denver, Colorado, under the behest of John Walsh, the U.S. Attorney, when asked by the media, I mean, this is national, this is information that's open to the public. Why are you guys – what is going on with Colorado Springs Fellowship Church in the U.S. government? The Colorado Springs Fellowship Church is not an investigation. It would have been great if that reporter could have said, why did you go to Willie P's house? Why did you go to Willie P's neighbor? Why did you harass a pizza boy and have him knock on Mr. P's door?
You converted a pizza man to go undercover ops.
They probably intimidated him.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that, Sam, that's a good. That's exactly. That's exactly what. And you know, if he's and no disrespect, I'm not saying he had anything on his record. Maybe a traffic ticket. You know, hey, you're going to do what we say because perhaps we can threaten you with something. Because that's what they do. They prey upon the fears and the weaknesses of people because they don't know any better. And that is just unbelievable. They have, and my understanding, Cliff, if I'm hearing you correctly, in regards to Walsh, he's behind it.
Well, he's behind it. I mean, Walsh, this is his house. He's the one who has to control his dog pound, per se. He has to control them. And if this is, again, the culture that he allows up in Denver, Colorado, that – hey, if you're going after a prosecution, after a conviction, these are the things you can do, which is pretty much whatever you want to. It is totally, totally sick.
Well, and to that point, the Walsh, his situation is the fact that there's nothing going on in that office. If there's an FBI agent involved or an IRS, a federal employee or agent, that Walsh is not aware of what's going on in that office. And the buck's going to stop with him because he's going to be held accountable for that. So it's not no, oh, I didn't know what was going on. Oh, I don't recall. Oh, absolutely. You know exactly what was going on.
Absolutely. There's no – I mean, Walsh was was he interviewed the, what's the FBI's agent who was in the second grand jury?
Moen.
Walsh was basically the prosecutor there in the second grand jury. He knows about this case. He was right there. He's the one who put only Moen, one FBI agent, on the stand, had him tell lie after lie after lie to get an indictment.
To get an indictment. Six.
So, yeah, that's the way he runs his house.
And then you went, this is what's sick, you went behind, not only did you go to his house, what kind of hate drives a person or corruption drives a person to seek out the innocent and go to his job?
Well, and here again, Lamont, when you look at all of those actions as well, it did not involve FBI agents or IRS agents going to the homes or jobs of other folks who had actually worked at IRP and who were not members of the Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. So you have other folks, a lot of other folks who had connections to IRP Solutions who never were subjected to this type of harassment.
And you know what it sounds like, Sam? That the IRP 6 was set as a fall guy.
Oh, absolutely.
They were set as the fall.
Absolutely. I mean,
you know how sick that is.
Well, David Zappolo was directly told that he was not a subject of an investigation.
Yes.
Where's David Zappolo today?
That's right, sitting in federal prison. Now, that is, there is another issue where you cannot bring a person who you have as a subject of investigation before a grand jury and tell them. If you tell them you're not subject of this investigation,
yeah,
they basically have been granted immunity.
That's the bottom
whether
line.
Whether they did anything or not. You granted him immunity and then come back and say, guess what, you're under an indictment too because you're standing on the side with these five black guys. So we're going to get you.
And as I hear Mr. P speak, because he is so unrelated to this case,
right,
that is where the flags are going to be. Not only Mr. P, but other members of Congress, and namely Pastor Rose Banks, they are so away from the situation. They were prey. They were set up. The government set up these folks, and innocent people would say, you know what? If we don't get it here, we'll make the RP6 fall. So we'll just go after them and trump something up.
Absolutely.
How is that legal?
And, Mr. P, we appreciate your time and, you know, for sharing your story with us. Thanks for your time, Willie. We are going to have there are so many things that happened, but we have another gentleman. His name is Sean Houghton, and Pastor Banks spoke about him with the FBI agent going to his job and you know, trying to get his boss basically to fire him and all these things. But we're going to get to you in a minute, Sean. Before we do that, we want to read Pastor Rose alluded to the oath of office that a judge takes, and that reads each justice or judge of the United States shall take the following oath or affirmation before performing the duties of his office. And we'll just use Judge Christine Arguello as our example here. It says, I, Christine Arguello, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will administer justice without respect to persons and do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon me as judge under the Constitution and laws of the United States. So help me God. Now, how do you make that decree and then do things, go totally outside of what the law is, ensuring that a prosecutor gets a conviction? How do you make a decree such as this and then you just walk away from it and say, you know what, I have your life in my hands, as she told IRP6, and told LaWanna Clark, I'm going to make an example out of you. You're going to spend some time in prison. What type of example? You're making the example that an innocent person, when you come before me, I will send you to prison. That is the example that she
made. And you will not have justice.
Yeah. No, there is no justice when it comes to 10th Circuit Judge Christine M. Arguello's courtroom up at the Arraj Courthouse in Denver, Colorado on 19th and Stout.
Wow.
Let's go to our next caller.
Okay, we are going to bring Sean on. Like I said, they went to Sean's job, harassed him, gave him a hard time, and this one will blow you away. Not that the other ones won't. This one is pretty out there. Sean, we appreciate you taking time with us tonight. You're live.
I want to say thanks, guys, for having me on. I just want to say it's amazing how, you know, you learn the system the hard way. We go through a lot of stuff in our life, and when things happen, you find out what you thought was a good thing wasn't. In my case, the intimidation was played out, I mean, straight up. They came to my job twice trying to get a conversation with me. They wouldn't give their ID or anything. Then they came to my house, and when they came to my house, and they it was an IRS agent and John Smith came in and sat down and began to question me about the church and about IRP and what was my function, and I took out my timesheet and started looking at my timesheet, counted my time, and so started giving me, they want to put me in the good list, and then they had the bad list. So if I give them information that they're looking for, I'd go into the good list. And so then they started telling me, well, since you won't give us any information, how do you feel if we go to your job and tell your manager, how you've been working on the side and stuff, and, what do you think will happen about that? And, well, I told them, I said, well, go ahead. And so they went to my job, told my manager, showed him my timesheet, and asked him, basically they told him that they believed that the church was doing money laundering, and I knew something about it, and they wanted to find out from me who was the person that put me up to doing it. And so my manager, he told him, said, well, I know that Sean, he was working on the side. I knew all that before, so that's not a problem. His timesheet doesn't tell me exactly what times he works, so, none of that stuff counts to him. And fortunately, my manager, he wasn't scared of them because he's been through similar situations, so he understood. And so basically what they thought was going to happen didn't happen for them.
Well,
but the intimidation factor of how they try to play, try to scare me to tell them something. But when you don't have anything to tell, and what you say is true, I mean, there's nothing to be scared about.
Yeah, and I think Sean, here's what's alarming to me about what you just said. This is how people give false testimony.
Yes.
Say, for instance, Mr. Houghton didn't know anything, as he said he didn't. Now, when you're threatening to take me to basically to go to my job now my livelihood, say he has kids and he's taking, how do you pronounce your last name? I'm sorry.
Houghton.
It's Houghton. I apologize for that, Mr. Houghton. So he's got a family, he's got kids, he's got the situation like that. And if he, like you said, you get somebody else in that situation that is scared to lose their job.
Right.
They'll say, well, I think I do know something.
Yes. What do you need me to tell you? What do you need to hear so that you leave me alone?
So this conduct agents, that is unbelievable.
Because they try to use the Christian thing on me also. They try to say, well, Sean, I'm a Christian too, and I believe in telling the truth and all this. And so they try to play. They try to play the whole game thing, try to get me to say something about the church and something to give them some kind of information. But there was nothing to give.
Sure, that's the core of our problem right there.
That's it. That is how they go out. They get false witnesses. They get
eyewitness testimony.
Yeah, eyewitness testimony that is meaningless.
Yeah,
they dig up fake evidence, by intimidation and fear.
That's it.
I mean, to have somebody, hey, I'm gonna go to your job and get you fired. Well, go ahead, because I don't have anything to tell you. Then goes to his job, tells his boss, hey, you know he's been doing this. His church is involved in money.
How do you feel that?
Where is your, see, that is where this blanket immunity thing needs to be torn down, because you can tell any lie that you want. You can drag not only a person's reputation, you can take a church's reputation and drag it through the mud during your investigation.
And remind you that the Colorado Springs Fellowship is not under investigation.
Not under investigation.
And how hypocritical is it to try and play the, quote, Christian card? And it's like, hey, I'm a Christian just like you. Oh, by the way, brother, I'm getting ready to go and get you fired.
Exactly.
I love you. I love you in Christ, but I'm getting ready to go and get you fired. Yeah, right.
And I think the resolve, and this is, please understand what I'm getting ready to say. The resolve and the, I would say, the biblical teaching that Pastor Banks enforces at Colorado Springs Fellowship Church, because she does that, there was a level of integrity that this gentleman implemented here. That, you know what, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say nothing wrong. I'm not going to say anything that is not true. I think what shakes me tonight in a way that I can't put into words is that if that's the action, and conduct of agents that we say where justice resides, we are in major trouble as a nation. That is uncomprehendable. Because of what he believed and the integrity he held within his own person, he was able to do the right thing. But what about that person that lives in an area that maybe, you know, money's tight, they got a baby on the way, there's no food in the house, and their livelihood is you're going to threaten a man's livelihood because he's not telling you what you want to hear? That is unbelievable to me.
And you call that
due process?
How do you call that due process? And see, the thing is, they never expect for this information to get out.
Absolutely.
And that's why their little blanket immunity thing has
got to go away.
It has to, because how do you fight against an FBI agent and an IRS agent? I mean, the IRS has no with what we read about the process that they're supposed to go through before they even can begin an investigation on a church. But you have an FBI agent and an IRS agent there in conjunction,
and the state attorney
saying this church is money laundering.
Yeah,
you have the Mr. IRS agent. Have you abided by U.S. Code 1176 that the IRS has to go through for investigating a church while you're telling a member of the public that this church is money laundering? Do you know the implications of that? I mean, that is breaking the law.
That's
right there. We need to get his name, Sean.
And it's defamation.
Make sure when you get off the phone, you give Olivia that information. If you still have his name, please say that you do.
We need that.
And Sean, we appreciate your time and for joining us tonight. This is the type of thing that, you know, when you look at it, you say, well, how does this happen? The way that it happens is because the public is quiet. They have nothing to say until it comes and it knocks on your door. But just like you said, Lamont, most of the time a person will crumble, will say, well, you know what? I'm not even being involved with this. What do you guys need me to tell you?
I have a family to take care of, man.
I got a family. You can't mess with my livelihood. And so tell me what you need to say. Just tell me you won't bring me into it. You're not going to investigate me. What do you need to tell me about this church, about these men, about this pastor, about anything? That is where the typical person would go.
The typical person is going there.
And you would never get the information that the FBI agent and the IRS agent
did what they did.
Did what they did. I mean, this is breaking the law.
You have crossed so many lines of law. I mean, this is not only of being fired from your job, you're brought up on charges for stuff like this.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, there's an old saying that you're so far from the line that the line is a dot to you.
That's insane.
That's how far away from the line they got.
Well, you know, this case just took on various forms and shifted in all kinds of different ways, which even more so lets you know that there was no concrete case. When it has to shift from one thing to another, you know, there was no concrete case. Cliff, I think we have someone else in the queue there that we wanted to bring on.
Yeah, I thought we did, but it looks like we've lost them. So, Jeanette, we were going to get you, but...
Be continued.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and just to go back to, you know, something you said earlier, Cliff, with regard to how this case, it was a lie right from the start. When you had FBI agent John Smith, even with the search warrant and affidavit, where he got a judge, got Judge Schaefer to sign off on that warrant, knowing that there was no wrongdoing going on at IRP Solutions. He had sworn affidavits from retired federal agents who were working at IRP Solutions, one specifically, Agent Hillberry, who was retired. And he said that IRP Solutions was a legitimate business, that they were legitimately developing a product, and that there was nothing going on sinister or illegal at IRP Solutions. Yet, Agent Smith persisted and still got a warrant and raided IRP Solutions Corporation. And
that's
then,
right.
During the course of the trial, how many times did Smith say, if IRP had paid their debt, we wouldn't be here? Well, how can you say that IRP is doing something criminal on one hand, and then on the other hand, you're saying that if they had paid their debt, then we wouldn't be here? Yet you
exactly.
did everything in your power to prevent them from generating revenue.
Exactly. And the way that John Smith got them there and the things that he did. I mean, I want to read this real quick. I know we're real short on time, but this says, do I have to talk to the FBI? So this is for those of you out there who feel like if the FBI comes to you, you're under obligation to speak with them. It says, no, the FBI does not have the authority to make anyone answer questions other than name and address, to permit a search without a warrant, or to otherwise cooperate with an investigation. Agents are usually lawyers, and they are always trained as investigators. They have learned the power of persuasion, meaning lie, the ability to make a person feel scared, guilty, or impolite for refusing their request for information. So remember, they have no legal authority to force people to do anything unless they have obtained an arrest or search warrant. Even when agents do have warrants, you still don't have to answer their question, and you shouldn't without being in the presence of your attorney.
I don't know about you guys, but this has been very, very enlightening. I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot by hearing this, and there's going to be more to come on the subject. I mean, you know, the more, and you know, we've been dealing with this case for a long time, but it still, you know, gets you when you see some of the things and hear some of the firsthand accounts of what happened and
right.
how illegal the extent that people will go to try and prosecute someone wrongfully. I mean, it reminds you of a lot of the cases now that you hear of exonerations that are going on where people never did anything. But it was just that prosecutor or that investigator's sole objective to just put that person away.
Yes, and I mean, I think we got to do another extension of this program because we have members of Colorado Springs Fellowship that were called to the first grand jury. They also went through their bank accounts. And they were in the trial at the IRP 6 case and were not allowed to bring up the fact that they that the government went in their bank accounts without subpoena. We need to speak to those people.
And now we have six gentlemen who are wrongfully convicted, wrongfully incarcerated, that being David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, and Demetrius Harper, and Gary Walker, and the impact that it's having on their families.
Yes, and so we're asking all of our listeners to go out to GoFundMe.com. That is GoFundMe.com. Do a search on IRP6, and you can find a little bit of history about the family out there, the families out there, and see what ways you're able to help. There is a donate button that you can click on, and you can donate to contribute to those families that are in dire need.
All right, we want to say thank you to everyone who called in today. Thank you to our guests, Pastor Banks of Colorado Springs Fellowship, Yolanda Walker, and other members of Colorado Springs Fellowship Church. We also want to say thank you to our Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson of K&D Productions, helping out Ill Skillers Girl in the control room to make sure you hear what it is that we have to say. Also, to our production support team, they give us accurate and up-to-date information so that we can pass that on to you. To the truth, we know you're out there. We appreciate it. And one more person, George Zimmerman, if you want to get in the ring with me, y'all, just come on the show and let me know. I'll take that challenge.
We want to thank Miss Barbara and Olivia for all your hard work behind the scenes. We appreciate you guys.
And for more information on Just Cause, go to a-justcause.com. Click the donate button there as well. We are a 501c3. And for archives of our program, go to ajcradio.com, live365.com, the Progressive Radio Network at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, and for on-demand programs, 05radio.com. On behalf of Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks, I'm Sam Thurman. Good night, America.
Good night.
Good night.